No Facebook, Instagram or WhatsApp for 6 hours. Facebook blames a technical glitch for its worst global outage in years. Are we too reliant on social media to communicate and do business? And has Facebook become too powerful? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Adrian Finnegan. Facebook is the world's biggest social media network by far. It connects 3 billion people. That's nearly 40% of the global population. Many use Instagram and WhatsApp as well, both owned by Facebook. But for several hours on Monday, no one could communicate or share content on the company's platforms. Facebook apologised and blamed a technical glitch. The outage is the latest trouble for the US-based tech giant. A former employee has accused it of putting profits ahead of concerns about health, safety, privacy and misinformation. We'll bring in our guests in just a moment. But first, a report from Al Jazeera's Roslyn Jordan in Washington.
For billions of Facebook's customers, no likes, no Insta moments, no worldwide phone calls or messaging. Facebook's chief technology officer needed Twitter to tell customers it was having massive technical difficulties. And then he apologized. Facebook services coming back online now may take some time to get to 100%. To every small and large business, family, and individual who depends on us, I'm sorry. The outage also shut down operations at Facebook's California headquarters. No phones, no computers. Some workers reportedly using Zoom to hold meetings.
It's a good reminder. The internet is incredibly fragile. It actually can have problems like this arise and not work for long periods. Typically, we don't really experience it much anymore. It used to be a lot more common like a decade ago.
Some found the outage at Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp funny. But for WhatsApp users, analysts say the disruption could have been catastrophic.
WhatsApp is tremendously important for communication in a lot of parts of the globe. And it does raise questions around, you know, how important it is for there to be redundancy, but also questions around, you know, should private companies be solely in control of infrastructure so critical to communications?
And the outage comes as Facebook is under fire for how it does business. U.S. regulators say Facebook is a monopoly and should be broken apart, a move the company opposes.
Facebook knows.
Last week, senators grilled a Facebook official about a whistleblower's allegations the company refuses to block hate speech, bullying, and other forms of harmful messaging from its sites. That whistleblower just gave her first TV interview, explaining why she thinks this is the case.
The thing I saw at Facebook over and over again was there were conflicts of interest between what was good for the public and what was good for Facebook. And Facebook over and over again chose to optimize for its own interests, like making more money.
Facebook denies Frances Haugen's allegations, saying, quote, to suggest we encourage bad content and do nothing is just not true. Rosalind Jordan, Al Jazeera, Washington.
All right, let's bring in our guests for today in Brussels, Estelle Masse, who is Europe Legislative Manager and Global Data Protection Lead at Access Now. In London, joining us is Alp Toke, founder and director of the internet monitoring organisation NetBlocks, and from the Dutch city of Maastricht, Catalina Goanta, who is Assistant Professor in Private Law and Technology at Maastricht University. Welcome to you all. Alp, I'm going to start with you. It's interesting that Facebook's statements on the outage on Monday have said nothing about potential malintent. Was this just human error, a technical failure, or could it have been sabotage?
Well, Adrian, the timing was very unfortunate, to say the least. This outage was very serious, perhaps unprecedented, lasting some 6 hours and having global impact. And it came just as these hearings are being made at the Select Committee in the US Congress. And there are these whistleblower complaints about practices at the company. So this is exactly when the company needs to have its stuff together. Yet suddenly we see this full impact outage affecting not only the company's main product, Facebook, but also Instagram, WhatsApp and its Messenger service. So the timing is awful. It will have raised a lot of questions. Is this a coincidence? But ultimately, there is a technical explanation for what happened. So at the moment, that's what the company has gone with. And that is consistent with what we've seen as well on the wire.
Estelle, whatever the cause, what does it tell us about Facebook's critical infrastructure? The fact that most of it appears to be located at or near Facebook's headquarters in the US. Are there solid technical reasons for doing that? Or with hindsight, is there a better way? Would it have made any difference in this case?
It shows us how much the incident shows that infrastructure means power and how much of this power is in the hand of Facebook. As it was mentioned, the outage was over different services that the company owns, but it was also affecting some of the hardware that the company offers. People were not able to connect to their Oculus system, for instance, or to the newly launched product, Ray-Ban glasses. It just showed that Facebook is not really helping building the internet in a decentralized manner that would help in case of incident like that to have backup plans to maintain communication. To maintain communication and help people get access to services, but it's created wall garden around all of their services to keep users inside. And when there is an issue, it almost is an equivalent as if the whole communication system fell down. A lot of people were saying like, oh my God, I'm here by using SMS or having to merge to different services or learning that there are indeed alternatives that exist. It just goes to show how much power this single company have and the impact it has on the internet and on users at large, which I'm hoping this is also a wake-up call for many to show that no matter which company it is, they shouldn't hold that much power over the infrastructure.
Catalina, what are the potential legal ramifications for Facebook over this six-hour outage? Could it be sued? And if so, by whom?
Yeah, so as we have heard before, there are going to be ramifications. Right now, it is very early to say how deep and how wide these ramifications will be. But let me just take you through two very specific examples. First of all, we have seen that in the past 5 years or so, there has been a blossoming content creator economy. Imagine that you had to upload an episode of your show tonight on perhaps on Facebook or on Instagram. You had to go on a live and do a giveaway. As a content creator, you have perhaps missed out on these possibilities, and you have incurred certain losses. The same goes for the example of all the many companies that are now really creating customer content and customer care on WhatsApp and on Facebook Messenger. And all of these companies perhaps had to go through finding alternatives, and those alternatives might cost. So these are damages that would indeed, depending on the jurisdictions, give these companies and individuals, freelancers, give them the opportunity to sue Facebook for sure.
Alp, in hindsight, was Facebook naive to have had all its platforms using the same critical infrastructure? Do integrated digital businesses need to be structured in that way? Why does Facebook do it like that?
Well, to understand this, we need to look back a little to 2019, when Facebook announced that it would merge its platform product platforms. So this meant essentially taking together all technology that it had acquired when it bought WhatsApp, when it bought Instagram, and putting them all behind a unified technical infrastructure. Now, for the company, this has huge benefits. This means maintenance overhead can be reduced because you now have one DevOps team, operations team maintaining these services. It also has an advantage for advertising technology and understanding your customers. So this means Facebook can accumulate more data about users and unify that data or correlate it between platforms if necessary to actually understand the behavior of the users. So those are business benefits for Facebook, but they come with this great negative attached that you now have much more centralization and you have more single points of failure. So that means if one thing breaks in one place, you suddenly lose all your platforms. They all go offline. You've put all your eggs in one basket. So depending on where you look at this from, that's a lose-lose because that's both losing users' data privacy and handing that over to companies, and it's reducing the resilience of that infrastructure. But perhaps if you're at the company, it's more of an even battle where you're trying to decide how can we bring together these services and collect more data without necessarily removing that resilience. So overall, it's going to be difficult for Facebook to fight this one, especially after what happened on Monday, because it's really shown what the problem is with bringing together so many major platforms under one roof.
Estelle, picking up on what you were saying just a few moments ago about the company becoming too big, too powerful, too important to too many people. And this is going to fuel further the argument for breaking Facebook up, isn't it?
Potentially, yes. But the conversation we should be having and what regulator needs to be looking at is whether or not breaking up is the solution and what really is the solution, looking at the power that Facebook holds. And I think at the moment, globally, so whether it's in Europe, in other parts of the world, when we look at those companies, we tend to look at the market where they operate or try to fix specific issue. For instance, in Europe, we have adopted a really strong data protection regulation that is largely being ignored by the company, and it's one of the problems that we have. And so we need to understand how all of the different pieces of that puzzle need to work together in order to address all of the societal issue, basically, that Facebook having so much power is creating on it. It's creating on the infrastructure, as we've seen yesterday. It's creating on privacy, as we've seen time and time and time again. It's creating on discrimination issue, et cetera, et cetera. And so there's probably maybe not a single solution to all of those different issues. And we need regulators who work on antitrust and competition, to work with privacy regulators, to work with media regulators, to work all together and understand really the breadth and extent to which this platform has been installed. Because I do think some of the current tools that we have in terms of regulation and regulatory response are probably inadequate to address the market power of Facebook and other actors like Amazon and Google, in the sense that they're all over the place. You know, there is no such thing as an internet market. There are superpowers in the ad market, in social media, in communication, et cetera, et cetera. So you need to look at all of it holistically. And perhaps one of the conclusions might be to break them up or to break different services or make sure that those different services are not integrated together, which, by the way, was one of the asks partly of the European Commission when Facebook bought WhatsApp. One of the conditions was that they would not be sharing of information between the two, a promise that Facebook did and break. So there is a lot of looking back that needs to happen on the company's practices and what happened, but there is also larger consideration on the different tools that we have. And if none of those tools are sufficient altogether, then perhaps we should be having the conversation of whether or not it should be broken up. Yet I'm not sure we're even there yet, and there are so many steps that needs to happen there, but we shouldn't be afraid of putting that option on the table, in fact.
Catalina, do you agree with that? Should private companies like Facebook be solely in charge of infrastructure that is so critical to global communications and to so many people?
I completely echo what Estelle has mentioned. So in legal literature, especially from North America, an author, Frank Pasquale, has been calling these platforms as functional sovereigns. So there is this debate of, is Facebook as powerful as a country? On the one hand, it is a company, just like many others we have seen in the history of capitalism. But at the same time, what we see with this entire Facebook downtime is that it has been the equivalent of an electricity outage, because it has been providing Facebook as a platform critical infrastructure that a lot of the public depends on. So in the words of Lynette Taylor, a Dutch scholar, a scholar from the Netherlands, basically these are public actors without public values. And this is the emphasis that we need to take. What exact public values do we want to enforce on these platforms? What we also see is that, to complement what was mentioned before, what we see that one solution could be more harmonization. So far, we don't have the cyberspace, but we have cyberspaces. The rules that are applicable to Facebook in the European Union are one side. The rules that are applicable in India and China, in the United States, are different sides of the story. So the question is, do we want to have just one set of rules that are going to be applicable to such a giant company that really operates transnationally? That's also food for thought.
Alp, it's been said that these platforms are public actors without public values. What does the outage that we suffered on Monday tell us about the public's reliance upon them? And is there any way in which social media could exist without a social media company facilitating it?
Well, what we've seen is that users use services like WhatsApp as though they're part of the platform, as though they are built into the phones. So users don't necessarily see this distinction between the device that they hold and the services that run on the platform. And that then becomes a huge problem because you've got these blurred lines. Who controls the infrastructure? Now, is this inherent to the technology itself, or is it just due to the structure of the business? That is a good question, and it seems that it is possible to decentralize these platforms more. It's not necessary to have such a centralized design, such a centralized model to communications networks. Now, what is possible is sometimes limited by the device. So Apple, for example, may limit what an application can do in terms of communicating peer-to-peer, connecting to other devices, to other phones. And that would then prevent you from creating perhaps a global mesh network application. And that's really the barrier at the moment. It's not the technology, it's not the physical hardware. It's on the one hand, some of these limitations that are in these devices imposed by the vendors, but also the companies themselves, which do want to hold on to power. For example, there have been efforts to federate networks, to link them in past. And those have all failed because companies essentially want to hold on to their users. They don't want to let go. So yes, the internet is a network of interconnected computers, but those interconnections are still governed by the companies.
Estelle, picking up on something you were saying a few minutes ago, we've heard that Facebook uses its platforms to harvest data from its users, which it then uses to sell advertising. One of its applications, though, WhatsApp, at least has end-to-end encryption, something which has long bugged governments, intelligence and security agencies who've argued for backdoor access to these encrypted chats. If Facebook is broken up and there is some sort of state involvement in the infrastructure of its platforms, doesn't that have implications for privacy?
And that's a very important question. So first, if Facebook is broken up, the state doesn't have to become the owner necessarily of the company. You know, WhatsApp and Facebook used to be two different companies. It happens differently. But it does really matter indeed what condition, for instance, WhatsApp encryption model would remain if it was to be separated from the full Facebook ecosystem. Now, there is a lot of other services, communication services that exist currently that don't belong to Facebook, that are other private company or decentralized company that offers end-to-end encryption as well on communication. So it can happen and it can be done in this way. We need to have the larger conversation on what also Facebook is doing still with some WhatsApp data, so not the content of the messages, but other data around communication, because I think Facebook themselves has made a lot of commitment towards staying on encryption, but it's not because it stays on Facebook that those commitments will continue to be there, but the value that encryption brings to safe communications for many of us around the world and for many sectors, to be honest, like encryption is not just about communication, it's also the foundation of banking sectors to avoid fraud, et cetera, et cetera. So you don't break encryption into a system without breaking a whole infrastructure as well. So it's again, often larger conversation that needs to happen, but to your point, you can separate system and make sure that privacy safeguards apply strongly. And to be completely honest, it's not that Facebook is a poster child for privacy. So potentially separating WhatsApp from Facebook could also bring more privacy by design feature, and stronger development around that in the products.
Catalina, on Monday, Facebook asked a judge to dismiss the Federal Trade Commission's antitrust law suit against it, which seeks to force it to sell Instagram and WhatsApp. The FTC says that Facebook has monopoly power in social networking. Facebook, though, says the FTC is ignoring reality and that it competes vigorously with some of the companies that Estelle was talking about there. TikTok, iMessage, Twitter, Snapchat, LinkedIn, Signal, YouTube. Who's right, the FTC or Facebook?
That's a very tough call, Adrian. So I think we're going to have to wait and see. But the problem is that this entire outage that Facebook has been going through has actually not made its own case stronger. Because indeed, if we look at Instagram and if we look at all the products that have been developed, including Reels as a way to mimic TikTok, the different type of products that are available on Instagram are really testament to what you were mentioning earlier, that indeed there is a competition on a market. And at the end of the day, a lot of social media companies will end up going and developing the same product. However, this is exactly what Estelle was mentioning, the interrelation of all of these companies that the FTC has also taken a lot of concern with. So we have seen that not just Facebook was down. We've seen that Instagram was affected, WhatsApp was affected, and even Oculus VR, so one of the other companies that Facebook holds. And that is the main concern there.
And I just want to get some comments from all of you on the Facebook whistleblower Frances Haugen's testimony that Facebook executives chose profits over safety and that it needs to be regulated like big tobacco. Allegations, of course, that Facebook strenuously denies. Alp, what do you make of that?
Well, Facebook will be desperately trying to avoid being regulated because it operates in an environment where it wants to make decisions. This isn't the first time the company has faced whistleblower allegations, and we know that they're going to oppose these allegations rigorously. In this sense, the outage could make a difference because it raises an additional set of questions over the centralization of the company, and add that with the new claims that have come around, and you have this very toxic set of claims and allegations about the company that all come together that really call for some form of regulation.
Estelle, what are your thoughts?
I think the conversation will be very important because it's not the first scandal that Facebook is facing, not even just this year. And to be honest, we kind of know by now that Facebook is misleading its users because their commitment doesn't match their practices. We've kind of knew also that some of the statement or vague statement that were made to government were not completely in line, and Facebook was trying to just ease some regulators to not be more regulated. But now it would also seem that Facebook has misled their own investors. So I think there is a lot of questions that need to be asking, not just to Facebook, but to the ecosystem that permits Facebook to exist the way it does right now. Should we really help Facebook maintaining this current business model that is harmful for users, that is potentially harmful for even for their investors, for advertisers, and really only working for them? And so really need to dig into those questions, because at the moment we only get half-truths or misleading statements from Facebook that is there to reinforce their current state power, but there is a lot more that could be done if we just cross-reference the impact that it has on all of us collectively.
Catalina?
To complement what has been said before, I think what is very important is to acknowledge also the novel business models that Facebook has been coming up with, also just social media platforms in general. And here I would like to stress very importantly, content monetization. So in addition to the platform ads that we have been already talking about, these are the ads that Facebook is going to get money from different platforms and from different brands to simply use their targeted advertising parameters. And therefore build on the kind of data that they gather from their users. In addition to this, we also see this rise of content monetization on social media. And this creates and brings with it new incentives to participate commercially in this ecosystem. So not just the advertisers and all of the intermediaries that have been involved in the platform ad ecosystem, but now also the advertising and any kind of monetization, including through social commerce, that social media is going towards. So I think that this should be on our agendas, because this can also help us understand better the kind of issues that have been getting more more light in the press, such as, for instance, the teenager issue on public on health and Instagram.
And Alp, very briefly, because we're almost out of time here, but as all three of you have said, as far as the Frances Haugen's testimony, we've been here before. There have been other Facebook whistleblowers. But given yesterday's outage and the severity of it, could this be the beginning of the end for Facebook, or at least Facebook as we know it, being such a giant conglomerate?
Well, it may not be the beginning of the end for Facebook itself, but it does appear to signal something new, whether that's realization that it's time for change, that the world needs alternatives as well, needs to start doing R&D into alternatives, decentralized options, but also legislative ways to perhaps make the company work more effectively in the public interest in the long run. So, yes, okay. It is a turning point, but
all right.
We'll see.
And there we've got to leave it. Many thanks indeed, Estelle Masa, Alp Toker and Catalina Goanta. As always, Thank you for watching. Don't forget you can see the program again anytime just by going to the website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, join us, ironically, at our Facebook page. You'll find that at facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can join the conversation on Twitter. We are at AJInsideStory. From me, Adrian Finnegan, and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for being with us. I'll see you again. Bye for now.